You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory, and welcome back to another episode of Naturopathy Earth Radio, or NPE Radio. I hope you're doing well today. All right, let's do some housekeeping here. The website is naturopathicearth.com, naturopathicearth.com. Just Google NPE Radio and you'll find it much faster. Go check out everything that's on the website. We would appreciate it. Also, we do have a Patreon account. If you could donate some money, that'd be great. You know, I was breaking this down, guys. If everybody who's listened to one of my episodes donated a dollar one time, just one time, it would equal my annual salary as a teacher. It really would. So please don't think that a dollar doesn't mean anything. A dollar means quite a bit if you add it all up incrementally. So please don't be like, oh, I can't afford a dollar. Yeah, you can, because you go buy coffee all the time and we spend money on nonsensical stuff. So you're coming back over and over listening to this feed. It's because you enjoy it and or you're getting something out of it. So all I'm asking, guys, is a dollar. That is it. 50 centavos, if it was possible, just 50 cents. Put your money where your mouth is. You know, if you get something out of this website, I would please recommend that you go do that. You can find the links to the Patreon account, of course, through the episode notes or on the website. And of course, I am a certified paleo-inspired health coach. If you're in the need to lose some weight, I might be able to help you with that. And we are going to have the raffle for the free consultation in the next episode. So next Monday, we will have the raffle for the next winner. So please go subscribe. If you go to the website, there's a pop-up that pops up. And put in your name and your email, and then you'll be added to the rolls. And of course, I don't sell that to anybody, because honestly, I don't know how to sell that to some third party. I am a teacher, and that is it. This is literally out of the basement of my house, even though I don't have a basement, so I guess it's not literal. It's recorded typically in my house. So I'm not going to like share your email with anybody. So get on the subscription list and we'll go from there. All right, let's talk about the pill and how it affects women's attraction to the opposite sex. Okay, I wanted to bring up this topic, and it's not really anywhere close related to naturopathy, aside from my antipathy toward big pharma and drugs. But I wanted to bring this up because I remember hearing about this probably on a documentary called The Science of Sex Appeal, which used to be showed on Discovery Channel, and I think you could probably find it on their website. And it's a great documentary about the science of sex appeal. And I believe one of the more common things that were covered on it, or the more memorable ones, would be like women, for example, are not attracted to the musky smell of men unless they're ovulating. Also that strippers get more money when they're ovulating, how the body changes closer to the ovulation of a woman. Her hips get wider, her waist gets narrower, her body temperature goes up. And it's just a fascinating study about evolutionary sexology. I don't even know what it would be called, but it was a fascinating study. And it probably wasn't in that actual documentary, but I remember hearing about this and I thought it'd be really interesting to bring it up because I'm aware through my own unscientific, unempirical ways that the majority of my listeners are female, not to eschew or shun you male listeners here. And I thought that any of you who have been on the pill or who were on the pill when you got married, you would find this topic interesting because you can go back and think about your own decisions when it came to choosing your mate. All right. So the name of this article is Can the Pill Change Your Taste in Men? This is written by naturalwomanhood.org by Kathleen Taylor about 8 months ago. I remember sitting in an embryology class in college, listening skeptically as my professor warned us about how the pill would likely lead us to relationships we wouldn't have otherwise picked. This professor was highly intelligent and respected, but also had a reputation for being a little, well, wacky. Yeah, I get that reputation at school too, because I bring up all these quote-unquote conspiracy theories about medicine, and so I'm the kooky one here. So I guess I'd be like this guy, a little wacky. After all, he had the placentas from each of his children's pregnancies in jars on the shelves in his office. We didn't know how seriously to take all of his bold statements. For example, he surprised us by stating he knew which of us were ovulating and which of us were on our periods. So I wonder that, you know, I have read studies that women tend to dress more provocatively closer to ovulation because, again, they're maybe not on a conscious level, but on a subconscious level trying to attract attractive men to them. And also they tend to wear more red, they tend to wear more lipstick, and they tend to want to go out during that time. Maybe they married a man for security or weight, but they don't find him as sexually attractive. So subconsciously, during the time that they're ovulating, they might be more likely to go out with the girls, to go to a bar, or go to a club, because they're trying to genetically select the better specimen to breed with. So these are just some things. So when he told us that the pill will change the kind of man we're attracted to, I logged it in the back of my mind so I could do a little fact-checking later. As it turns out, the wacky professor was onto something. It's a common belief that opposite personality types are attracted to each other. It brings balance to a relationship. Yeah, I don't think that's true at all. Opposites don't attract. You need to have similar comportment, similar values, similar views on things, ideology. I think that's crucial, because if on any level, similar, like similar hobbies and so forth, you always have something to talk about. But on a greater level, if you have differing views on everything, you're going to be fighting so much. And at the beginning, you're always like, oh, I can respect the fact that you have a different opinion. But once you get into the nitty gritty, deep into the relationship, after a little while, you start making those passive aggressive comments about the other person's religion or political views. And then it becomes fighting, and then you're just, it's outright hostility. So I don't agree with that. But this concept is actually happening on a deeper biological and subconscious level too. In fact, a woman's sense of smell can actually pick up genes related to a man's immune system. These genes are called MHC genes, major histocompatibility complex genes. Typically, women tend towards men who have different MHC genes than they have themselves. The body knows that a more diverse set of MHC genes will create children with stronger immune systems. A 28 study led by C. Craig Roberts. Ooh, C. Craig Roberts. I like this guy already. He has his first name as an initial, like A. Gregory Luna, right? A professor of social psychology at the University of Stirling, Scotland, was designed to test how the pill affects this preference. Women were given T-shirts of men with similar and dissimilar MHC genes. They smelled and rated the shirts based on their attraction to the scent. This was done by the same woman while off the pill and then again while on the pill. Results show that after being on the pill, women shifted their preference toward men with similar MHC genes to themselves. The evidence suggests that the pill is associated with this shift in attraction, but there is only speculation as to why. It may be that when on the pill, women are drawn more towards a nurturing person, since the pill mimics pregnancy, possibly even a relative. And we'll go back to this later. Another study from 2013 proposes similar findings regarding hormonal birth control. Even though this study only involved 12 women, the results are interesting and worth mentioning. The women were divided into two groups, on the pill and not on the pill. They blindly kissed men and rated each kiss based on the attraction to the man and their eagerness to kiss the man again. The idea being that during a kiss, a woman is picking up on all the right smells of the man. Okay, so they were blind when they kissed these guys. Quote, Kissing is ideal for accessing olfactory cues as it places the nose in close proximity to areas of the body containing large and numerous sebaceous glands, close quote, the study reports. Then the women rated photos of 20 men, including the men she had kissed. She rated the photos in the same way as the kiss, how attracted she was to the man, and how eager she'd be to kiss him. The women were not on the pill and usually rated the attractive kisser as always as also having an attractive photo. Women on the pill did not seem to have any correlation between their selections. These two studies tell us that the pill likely disrupts one of the natural ways we choose a mate, but they don't tell us how this might affect relationships. Imagine a common scenario. A woman gets on the birth control pill as is commonly encouraged by society, whether it be for medical reasons or for dating. She meets a guy, dates him, and marries him. They decide to start a family. She goes off the pill. They start to have relationship problems and believe they are growing apart. She loses interest and feels she married the wrong man. He feels betrayed. They decide to divorce. Wah, wah. Could this change in attraction be significant enough to end a relationship? Could it be a factor in why so many marriages end in divorce? Another study by Professor S. Craig Roberts investigated this question. This study measured marital satisfaction in partners who began their relationship while using hormonal contraceptives against couples who started dating while not using contraceptives. The results were pretty consistent with what they had predicted based on the previous study. The women on the pill were less satisfied with the sexual aspects of their relationships. They found their partners less attractive. They rejected sex more than their counterparts and were more likely to be the ones to initiate a divorce or separation. Okay, so I'll repeat that. Women on the pill were less satisfied with the sexual aspects of their relationship. They found their partners less attracted and they rejected sex more than the counterparts who weren't on the pill and more likely to initiate divorce or separation. However, this group of women actually had higher rates of satisfaction for non-sexual elements of their relationship, like how the man acted as a father. Overall, this research indicates that using the pill at the beginning of a relationship can impact the relationship, although the impact may not always be strong enough to cause the end of the relationship. The author notes, quote, "We stress that the nature of this research question precludes a true experimental approach and that therefore we remain cautious about the causational link between the associations we describe. We also recognize that the reasons for any relationship survival or dissolutions are complex and not limited to contraceptive choice at its inception. Nevertheless, our data provide important evidence in support of the proposal that the use of oral contraceptives during partner choice and possibly beyond has the potential to profoundly influence the outcome of long-term relationships," close quote. So, if you are single and considering a hormonal method of birth control, there's real evidence here that should be taken into consideration. Heed the advice of my wacky professor and give yourself the best shot at landing a happy, healthy, and lasting relationship. Then stay off the pill by learning a fertility awareness-based method to effectively plan your family with no side effects. And if you're in a marriage that started with the pill, there's no need to fret. Marriage can be a beautiful commitment with a stronger hold than the pill. Of course, so that's the end of the article. So this is from naturalwomanhood.org. So I think they're pretty embracing of natural family planning, which I'm sure some of you look down upon. But let's take a break and then we'll comment on this and finish up this quickie. Okay, so what are some takeaways from this? I think the biggest one is I find anything that has to do with science and sex to be fascinating. Like, for example, women wear lipstick and makeup to mimic sexual arousal. So when women are aroused, their lips get red and engorged, and their cheeks get pinker. And so we wear lipstick, or women wear lipstick, to simulate that, to simulate the perpetually aroused. I mean, I think that's just fascinating. So to me, these studies are fascinating. They're just incredible. So the thing that I find interesting is, so if you started dating, let's say your husband, when you were on the pill, you might have not picked him had you were not on the pill. You would have picked a man that was more masculine, maybe a little more confident, maybe a little more carefree or careless or irresponsible, but somebody who is probably better looking. But if you picked your mate when you're on the pill, you'd pick mates or qualities that a good father would have. So he might be nice and considerate and responsible and hard working, but maybe not have the genetic material that you would want to pass on to the next generation. So the study mentions, and this reinforces that women who met their mate when they were on the pill, they just don't find them as sexually attractive. Because again, the pill mimics pregnancy. The progesterone in it mimics pregnancy. And so if you started dating your husband when you were on the pill, you maybe liked him for all these reasons that you thought would be very protective and nurturing if you were pregnant or good father qualities. But you might not find him as sexually attractive. So the article talks about how there's a high rate of divorce among women who picked their mate when they were on the pill. I would also posit that there's probably higher rates of infidelity as well, because a lot of these women might not even realize it, but let's say they realized it, that they met their mate or their husband when they were on the pill, and there's a lot of qualities that they like in them. But then when it comes to having a kid, they might not find their husband that attractive, and then they might be more likely, as we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, on a subconscious level, maybe on a conscious level, maybe they're just going to outright have an affair to breed with a better-looking man. But on a subconscious level, you know, they'll wear the skimpy clothes, and they'll wear the red dress and so forth when they're off the pill and they're trying to get pregnant. Lots of times in these cases too, when the woman gets off the pill, they look at their husband who they started dating when they were on the pill, and they're like, I don't find this guy attractive. I don't want, it's not necessarily not to have sex with him, but I don't find this guy attractive at all. And in most cases, the women don't even know this. So, I mean, most women don't even know what we're talking about right now. But for women who do know this, it's important to learn. So look, guys, when I certainly, how do I phrase this? We just recently covered sex ed. I have to teach the introductory medical class, and every spring in April, we have to do the district required sex ed curriculum. And the sex ed curriculum is very strict, and you have to stick to the book. And one of the sections is on contraceptives. And we talk about contraceptives, and in it, it talks about, you know, what are the percentage, like what are the side effects? And then, honestly, all the hormonal contraceptives, the only side effect that they mention sometimes is the weight gain. But they don't mention the stroke. They don't mention the higher rate of throwing clots and having embolisms. They don't mention the sexual dysfunction. They don't mention the bone demineralization. They don't mention the higher rate of possible breast cancer. But they talk, they mention how if you're on the pill, you only have like 6% chance of getting pregnant in a given year. And then they talk about if you use condoms, and it's about a 12% chance of getting pregnant if you're using it the right way. And then they get to coitus interruptus or pulling out, and how that's actually effective 78% of the time. So if you pull out every time you have sex for a year, you only have a 22% chance of getting pregnant. But then the last thing they mention is no method at all, and how in a given year, if a man and wife are completing the act, there's an 85% chance she's going to get pregnant. But we can't mention natural family planning or what they would call the rhythm method in the old days in the curriculum. And I think this is a disservice, because a lot of women, and go back to that episode I did on the reasons you shouldn't be on hormonal contraceptives. A lot of women hate the pill, right? But if you're in a married couple, you don't want to necessarily have condoms, right? Because condoms lack the intimacy. But let's say you don't want to get pregnant. And so then you're left with less contraceptive choices. So you have the sponge, you have the shaving cream spermicide you can shoot up there, you have the diaphragm. But all these have disadvantages. And then, of course, there's the IUD. Now, the IUD, there's two different types. The most common one is Mirena. And that is actually sprayed with hormonal contraceptives. And so a lot of the reasons women use the IUD is because they think, oh, I don't want to be on hormonal contraceptives because I don't like the side effects, but this will give me relatively permanent contraceptive abilities. I would say this. A lot of women don't know that Mirena does have hormonal contraceptives. So if you already have a sensitivity to those or you don't want to have those side effects, don't get Mirena. You can get regular IUDs, the old school copper ones. And I know people who are on the IUDs. And look, in most cases, many women can be with an IUD that's not non-hormonal and be fine. You know, it's great if you know your partner doesn't have an STD. Chances of getting pregnant on an IUD are like 1%. It's very slim and it's hassle-free and you don't have to worry about it. There are some women, though, that do get side effects from it, either through copper toxicity or some other cause. I mean, essentially, the IUD causes like a micro-infection around your cervix, which prevents sperm from swimming around it. But I would suggest to women that even if you're on the IUD, just notice if you notice your personality changing, if you start having mood swings and irritability, because there are some women who can get on the IUD and then they have just crazy mood swings. But my point is this, after 5 minutes, natural family planning. Now, I did natural family planning when I was married to my ex-wife because we were Catholic and she didn't like the pill or we didn't like the pill. And by the time we were trying to have kids, we did natural family planning. So natural family planning, of course, can be used both ways. You can use it to track your infertility, but you can also track your fertility. So with natural family planning, I will say this. It is pretty effective. It is pretty effective. And of course, it's hormone-free. The thing about it is that you just got to know when you're ovulating. Sperm typically lives about 5 to 7 days in a woman. The egg dies within 1 day if it's not fertilized. So the key is knowing when the woman is releasing her egg, when she's ovulating. And in the typical woman, I suppose it's day 14, so two weeks after the first day of your period. And that's when she's ovulating. So if you do the math, an egg lives 1 day, that's day 15. So if you don't have sex from day 7 to day 15 in that window, or if you use a condom or whatever, you're not going to get pregnant. Or conversely, if you want to get pregnant, you have sex a lot during that time. Most of the time, the urologists recommend like every other day to give your sperm chance to rebuild a critical load. But either way, so the rest of your cycle is infertile. And I think this is important to know. So if you can do natural family planning and do all of it that goes with it, a lot of it is tracking your, I know this might sound a little graphic, your vaginal discharge, because your vaginal discharge changes throughout your cycle. When a woman's close to ovulating, it gets kind of sticky and almost like egg yolky. And also you track your basal temperature, even weird things like the hips, as I mentioned, widen, the waist narrows. And if you track your cycle or even get the ovulation sticks, you'll know when you're ovulating and then you'll know when you're not ovulating. So if you're not wanting to have a child, you can have sex through almost 3/4 of your cycle and be safe. And only during that quarter are you in risk of getting pregnant. Now, there's always a chance that you could throw out another egg in that given month. So that, this is what we cover in sex ed too. It's like, can you get pregnant on your period? Yes, you can, because most women ovulate around the 14th day. But women, especially in high school, are notorious for having irregular cycles. And there's nothing stopping the other ovary or that ovary from ovulating out another egg on the 8th day of your cycle. So if you had sex during your period, yeah, you can get pregnant. Now, chances are you going to get pregnant if you have sex in your cycle? No. Or if you have sex on the second half of your cycle after day 15? No. But the thing is that you just never know when you're ovulating unless you're really, really tracking it. So my point is this. There are really, honestly, and this is just my personal opinion, there's really no good reason to be on hormonal contraceptives. There really is not. Because the side effects are horrible. And if anything, they could be affecting who you choose as your lifelong mate. So those are two humongous things. I mean, especially if you smoke, you have a much higher rate of throwing a clot in dying because you're on the pill. But more importantly, maybe, because maybe you're not smoking because nobody really smokes anymore, it determines who you find attractive. So you could be put on the pill because you had acne or regular periods when you were 16, and then later on in college you became sexually active, and you're just on the pill for 10 to 15 years. And then you meet your husband, and all along your natural desires for this guy would not exist, and you wouldn't give him the time of day had you not been on the pill. So these are two major reasons why maybe we don't want to be on the pill and maybe just use condoms and then natural family planning if you can stick to natural family planning. Because, yeah, you could do the diaphragm, for example, but a lot of people don't like the diaphragm or the sponge or the spermicide foam because you have to stop the moment that you're about to have sex and say, hold on, let me go to the bathroom and then put in the diaphragm. Yeah, if you don't have that problem with it, then do the diaphragm. But my point is like there's issues with the pill. And I think this is a really important one here in that it affects who you find attractive. So personally speaking, look back, look at your husband, look at him right now, if you're with him, and just wonder, like, did you notice later on when you got off the pill, if you noticed your physical attractive, I mean that raw animalistic drive to have sex with him, did it change at all when you got off the pill for whatever reason? Or the other thing is if you're young and you've always been on hormonal contraceptive, so the implant, the shots, the IUD, get off of it before you marry somebody and see if your attraction to him changes. Because I think it's very important. If you're 28 and you're about to get married and you've been on the pill your whole life, I recommend getting off the pill to see if those rose-colored spectacles, so to speak, come off and you realize, oh, well, my guy has a lot of great qualities for father, but I don't necessarily find him attractive and I don't want to marry him. And this isn't shallow. We're attracted to who we're attracted to. But it's like free market economy. Let the supply and demand of the free market economy decide that. So in vis-a-vis this, let your natural hormonal drive and attractiveness, you know, the dopamine, the pheromones, and all these things that make us find somebody attractive, let that determine who you marry and not some curtain that goes over your eyes and goes over your emotions and goes over your uterus and your ovaries that we call the pill. Don't let that decide for you. All right, so if you want more information on this, by all means, look it up. But these are just a couple of suggestions that I have for you. I know this topic is a little off what we normally talk about, but I just think it's very, very interesting. And it is in terms of the typical episode in that it's another of many bullets that I have that I want to put in Big Pharma's stomach. So last thing, please subscribe to the podcast. It'll only take you 2 seconds. Just hit that subscribe button. And as always, post a review for this podcast series, MP Radio. An honest review is all I want. I like getting feedback. It would help me to tailor an episode more to what the people want. And also post reviews for the other two episodes that are under the Naturopathic Earth umbrella. So that would be Kate's Apothecary and Confessions of an Obese Child. And of course, last thing, guys, if you can, please donate $1 a month to the website through our Patreon account. Okay, guys, until next time, take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth. And subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.